Here we go again.
It's time to talk.
I thought it was April Fool's Day when I heard that one. Get me off the air before I have a heart attack. We will have nothing to see for it. There's been many false dawns.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
The kindness of Cork people will never let you down.
Conversation that matters.
Come on, be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Paperwise this morning, 15,000 people have bid for 75 council houses, and this is just in Cork, and this is just within Cork City's area. This is the choice-based letting system. Some are in their 80s bidding for 75 council houses, 15,000 bids. It is absolutely shameful. It really and truly beggars belief that we've got into this kind of trouble and into this nightmare with regards to housing. And what are we going to do about it? And what are those who are well paid, whether all different sections across the government, whether it's, you know, you look at TDs, or you can look at ministers, you can look at councillors, you can look at, you know, those that are in different various departments within City Hall and County Hall and the funding they receive and how they spend it. But how in the name of God was it let get so chaotic? That is a, and the Echo correctly pointed out, is a huge housing queue and indeed a huge housing problem. And it goes from bad to worse, unfortunately. The front of this morning's Independent talks about they are in such a state of chaos now and confusion that they're looking at all sorts of different ways to try and factor some way of getting properties for people to live in. So for those then who are looking for social housing or public authority housing or help with regards to being homed, they are ratcheting up now to the moves to buy or to rent empty homes to house asylum seekers. So the government is launching a new drive, and they will buy or they will rent empty properties from landlords. They'll rent or buy empty properties from developers and builders to help house record numbers of asylum seekers. So you can see where this is coming from. To say that this is a car crash in the waiting, it's not. The crash has happened. There's already been casualties because on the one side you have people who are trying to bid for homes on council lists, and on the other hand then you have the national government scrambling to try and buy up as much property as they can for asylum seekers and refugees. And what happens? Nobody wins. Everybody gets lost. It's a bit like musical chairs on a grand scale. And unfortunately, you'd almost think that I planned this morning, but I didn't. It's just the way the stories in the papers fell for me. The Star this morning says they have no plan whatsoever for private sector. And they really and truly don't. And then, let's say you're in the private sector and you're renting. You heard about all of these rent controls and landlords leaving the market and all sorts of stuff like that. But I have to tell you that actually the truth of it is that statistics now show that the cost of rent continues to go up. So people in situ with a lease across the country have found their rent go up by just under 6%. And new tenants who are, you know, looking and moving in to a property are finding that the rent is going up by in and around 9%. And there's also been a significant drop in the amount of tenancies that are being registered as tenancies or places available for rent. It doesn't surprise me that it's 31% year on year. I would have thought it was higher. I mean, all you got to do is go on Daft and look at the amount of properties that are available for rent now. It's pathetically low. And of course then, of course, we have many people coming to this country who have nowhere to live. And so they pitch up tents in the middle of Dublin. So they managed anyway to move 285 single males from tents into international protection centres. And the rest of them then were told, you know, where's the effect of sling your hook, there's nothing for you, come back again in the morning, we'll see what we can do for you. So they tore down all of the tents yesterday. And they warned those that didn't get a place that they would be arrested if they tried to return. So on the one hand, the Gardaí have to usher away refugees. They don't want to be doing, guards don't want to be doing that kind of work. But it probably looks good for politicians now in the eyes of the Irish electorate to say, well, look, we are taking it very seriously. A bit like across the water with the Rwanda policy, I suppose. So tent packing is a front page of Making the Mirror today. The shelter was dismantled. Harris has pledged that they will not return. I mean, what's he going to do? Is he going to be there with a brush or a stick or something to make sure that they stay away? Where else are they going to go because of the chaos on the border and situations like that? There's other stories making the papers today. And because of what, unfortunately, people are giving their children, their babies and their toddlers, we see a story in the Examiner this morning where dentists have said that they've extracted up to 20 baby teeth from children as young as two because of, yeah, you guessed it, severe tooth decay caused by sugary drinks. Now, it's an interesting article because, I mean, firstly, taking 20 teeth out of a two-year-old, I didn't even think they've had 20 teeth. It must be all of the teeth that are coming up. They whip them all out. There's about 350 children now in Cork alone who are on waiting lists for extractions under general anaesthetic. So it's chaos everywhere, really, in every section of the public service at the moment. But apparently, one of the aspects of it, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, text 0868104106, particularly if you're parents of young children. Babies sleeping with bottles of honey sweetened milk or other sweetened drinks are particularly vulnerable because the child is there all night long bathing their teeth in sugar. And that's according to Dr. Catherine Gallagher, who's Vice President of the Irish Dental Council. So what is it that the parents are giving? I mean, be honest with me. What kind of drinks are being put into baby bottles? Is it, as they suggest, honey sweetened milk, or is it sugar sweetened milk, or is it, you know, sweet drinks? Because it's rotting babies' teeth, that's for sure. 20 teeth routinely taken out from two-year-olds. And can you just pop in here? I need a little bit of help with the desk setting, if you don't mind. Thanks, Lee. In other stories making the papers today, there's a lot before the courts where, you recall the story from the airport there some time ago where there was a woman involved in an incident up there involving a man. She was before the courts recently and sentenced yesterday to 2 years imprisonment with the last month suspended. It had to do with causing of the death of a man near Cork Airport. They had been drinking heavily throughout the day. Now, she reported that the victim suffered a cardiac arrest, you might recall that, while standing outside the car. But it would appear that she got into the dead man's car while intoxicated, reversed it when he was standing behind it, and reversed the car over him, causing his death. A Ukrainian national, I have tried on many occasions to try and pronounce her name, Kazenshka Vaslenko, a 43-year-old, admitted careless driving causing the death of a fellow Ukrainian called Andrei Nesterov, who was aged around 50. It happened at 2 o'clock in the morning last October. So that came to a conclusion yesterday. 2 years imprisonment, the last nine months suspended. And then other things involving moving vehiculars is the story of a man who drove with a friend on the roof of his car and another on the bonnet. He's appeared in court after one of them was left with a brain injury. A fellow called Adam McCarron, this is a story from the court reports in the Mirror this morning. He's pleaded guilty to dangerous driving, causing serious bodily harm. Why? Well, apparently, he braked so hard that the fellow on the roof slid off it, and he sent the victim crashing to the ground. Head injuries so severe that a medical report said there was a risk of to his life due to the pressure on his brain. He pleaded guilty to it. So, I mean, the recklessness of all of us in our lives, but particularly, unfortunately, you see quite an amount of that with young people and, you know, and cars. Could I just also mention that there's an interesting one that's going to develop next year, and that will be the trial of the man charged with the murder of his wife, who was found buried in their home. I'm referring, of course, to Richard Satchwell. Very significant update to this, actually, particularly for journalists. I don't know whether this will include me, but the defence team has said that they intend to call a significant amount of evidence in the case, and that you would expect that, for sure you would. But amongst it will be anybody that Mr. Satchwell communicated with by way of interview, and the media as well, which potentially means that media, members of the media, could even include me, I have no idea, may well be called to give some kind of evidence by the defence team next year. So that's going to be interesting if that actually does happen. But we're looking at a trial date, certainly not this year, but we are certainly looking at next year. I might come back to that story a little later on this morning. And then other papers are picking up on different topics that aren't necessarily related to the courts or housing or things like that. One of them has to do with And it is real, you know, the continuing drop in electric vehicle car sales. They've dropped by another 41% last month. A lot of people are just holding out. They're holding off. And they're not necessarily going for full electric vehicles anymore. Many are deciding to go for the hybrid option. One of the big problems, of course, with the dropping in sales of EVs, down 41% month on month, is people have an issue with the batteries. The Independent this morning says battery electric vehicles are still regarded by many as too expensive to buy, taking too long to pay back. There's concern as well, according to the Independent, about public and private charging points, because one of the big issues people always seem to have is range anxiety. If you really do drive a lot, whether it's for a living or you drive a lot for a living and pleasure at weekends, an electric car is something you really need to think very carefully about, because you could spend half the day charging the damn thing. I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but it's an interesting one in The Independent as to whether people should be allowed to drink at gigs or whether or not people should be allowed to drink at sports fixtures. Now, more and more gigs, of course, well, not more and more, but you do see gigs that are refusing people alcohol coming into auditoriums or whatever. I think Christy Moore started the ball rolling on that one. But it's more to do with rugby, because there's a game coming up between Leinster and Northampton in Croke Park, apparently. And The Independent is saying that fans will not be allowed to drink alcohol in their seats during this game. It's very different to the GAA's position when the last foreign sport landed in Croke Park in 2014. It was an American football game, and they were allowed to drink then. If you're going to Bruce Springsteen at Croke Park, you'll also be allowed to drink. But rugby supporters won't. Now, alcohol at rugby matches has been a hot topic in recent years, because over in Wales, they have designated alcohol-free zones, apparently. And the Aviva hasn't made any move to do anything like that. They actually commissioned a survey last year, and they asked fans, and fans came out in favour of bringing drink to their seats. But for those who are annoyed by it, getting up and down all of the time, people getting drunk, people getting in the way, spilling drink, you know, they say, listen, can you not have your couple of pints before or after, enjoy the match or enjoy the concert? Your thoughts on that are welcome. Text 0868104106. And with regards to drink, we are now going to be heading in very soon to the leaving certificate holiday season, where many young people, boys and girls, will be heading off overseas to sun destinations to party and to unwind after the exams. And the government, in the shape of Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, has launched a campaign called Be Summer Ready, because there have been far too many tragedies summer after summer. And they just want our young sons and daughters to be safe overseas, because God knows, we often hear of fatalities of the Irish overseas, and a lot of the time it's young Irish people who are away on leaving certificate holidays. A couple of interesting ones then with regards to our entertainment choices. Who's watching Baby Reindeer? Hands up. Okay. Both with me here have watched it in total. I'm about halfway through it. Do you not think that your man, no disrespect to him though, but when you're watching it, did the penny never drop? And I've only watched about four episodes. But why in the name of God, like, didn't he just go to the police straight away? I mean, it just goes on and on. You end up screaming at the TV. Will you ever just report it, man? Go to the police. Go to the... But he doesn't. This goes on and on. Anyway, if you don't know anything about Baby Reindeer, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But if you do, I wonder, would you agree or disagree? I mention it because we were watching it again last night, and there's two individual characters in it. One is Martha, who's the serious, serious stalker, right? Who's following him everywhere, every aspect of his life. But the other is the character who's feeding him the drugs, right? Don't know what his name, can't remember him. He's a total shyster, and from what I'm seeing three or four episodes into it, he is not what he claims to be. But I was wondering, because this is true, right? This is based on fact. In fact, the lead actor in it is the actual individual who was actually the victim in this. But I often wonder, what about the real people, the two people involved in this, Martha and this other geezer, Richard Gadd? Richard Gadd is the victim, right? I'm talking about the guy in the apartment who's feeding him the drink and saying he's going to make him famous. What about the real people? Would they have a case? Because it'd be quite easy to identify them. And then this morning, here we have it, they say they went to great lengths to hide the identities of the real people behind the two main characters, but they have a major crisis now because lots of people watching it then went to track down the real individuals in the TV show. And one of them, a woman by the name of Fiona Harvey, who denies that she did the things that were claimed to have been done in the TV series, is getting very stroppy about it, and she's received death threats from, I suppose, would you call them, armchair detectives who've Googled and found her, and she's claiming that she's getting death threats, and she's threatening to sue Netflix. So this is a TV series that keeps giving and giving. And if you like your vinyl, lads, the biggest selling vinyl album at the moment continues to be Fleetwood Mac's Rumours album. It wasn't enough that it was first released in 1977. It wasn't enough that it's already sold 40 million copies around the world. It is still topping the vinyl charts. Because we've had a huge vinyl revival in the last couple of years. And I love the fact that we have. So Rumours from Fleetwood Mac, number one. Dark Side of the Moon by The Floyd at number two. Nirvana are at three. Oasis, Queen, Bob Marley, Stone Roses, another Oasis album, David Bowie, and another Nirvana album. So people are nostalgic for a bit of retro music and getting their favourite stuff on vinyl. Because a lot of these are 70s albums, 80s albums. Lots and lots from the noughties. Anyway, text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Can I just mention, before I go into the ad break, I'm going to be talking with Father Tom Hayes from the Diocese of Cork and Ross. And I just want to alert you that some may find my conversation with him, what I'm about to talk about now, upsetting. But you will be aware of a former priest by the name of James Murphy. He's not a priest anymore. That will become apparent when I chat in a few minutes' time with Father Tom Hayes. But he has been sent to prison again, this time for 31 months for sexually abusing young boys who were in his care in South London in the 70s and 80s. Now, if you wind the clock back, he went to London in the 70s and 80s, and the first time he spent two decades in London. He faced charges that saw him being jailed in 2000 for 30 months. He went over at that stage to clear his name, but then was found guilty. And then the charges related to altar boys and young children as young as five that he'd come in contact with through the Boy Scouts and football teams and youth groups with the different parishes. They called him, like he was literally hiding in plain sight. Some of the victims who are grown adults now called him a wolf in sheep's clothing. And after he came out of jail in 2001, he came back to Ireland, back to Cork, but he didn't, you know, he didn't go back to Glentawn, or he didn't go back to any of the parishes. He spent 20 years, I have no idea doing what. One of the issues for this is the 10 years that he was a parish priest in Glentawn, the worry is that he also could have been abusing young children. We don't know, but it isn't known. But recently then, more men who were young boys at the time came forward and made more accusations against him, James Finbar Murphy. So he was extradited back to the UK. And this abuse involved at least 11 boys ranging in age from 5 to 11 and took place again between 75 and 88 when he was in London and he came back to Cork ultimately. So that's where we're at with it. The one of the big worries was that the police in the UK have always said that they believe he committed hundreds, maybe even 1,000 or more assaults on young boys. He is a serious, or was a serious, serious predator. He's doing a second stretch in prison now. And they even voiced fears that he may have molested children during his 10 years in Ireland as a priest, and that would have been primarily in Glentawn. So more on that with Father Tom Hayes after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Father Tom Hayes, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Thank you for taking the call. It's a difficult call. In fact, it's a rather disturbing call considering the contents. And I know that you issued a statement on behalf of the Diocese of Cork and Ross only in the past 24 hours or so in connection with a man whom I think we'd all would agree at this stage was a very nasty, evil man, a predator, a paedophile, a sexual abuser of children. Can I ask you if the correct reference is Father James Murphy or just James Murphy?
He's just James Murphy now.
Okay. And when
he hasn't been,
go ahead.
He hasn't been a priest for over 20 years.
Okay, so when he would have come back from the UK after the first period in jail of 31 months, he would have been defrocked, is it, or what?
Well, as soon as he pleaded guilty to the offences that he was charged with in London that time, and this was in the year 2000 now, as soon as he pleaded guilty, he was immediately prohibited from any form of ministry. Then the belonged, which is actually diocese in London, they would have initiated the formal process then to have him removed from the priesthood effectively.
Okay.
So that normally takes, a year, sometimes 2 years. So I think in his case, it took 2 years before it was completely formalized.
Okay.
But in that waiting period, he still was not doing any ministry. Well, in fact, he was in jail during that period.
Yeah, that 31 months. But if I could rewind the clock, Father Tom, and maybe you might be able to fill in what you know of the man. He obviously would have gone through, I guess through Maynooth and then gone to different dioceses in London, is it?
Yeah, he grew up in County Cork, but he was ordained to serve in England from the very start. So he wouldn't have gone through Maynooth, because most of the men who went through Maynooth would have gone to serve in local Irish dioceses. So he began ministry in England and was in ministry in England until 1992. And at that point, he had some significant health issues, and he asked his bishop in the UK to give him leave to come back to Ireland for some time, which he did, to recuperate. And while he was here, then he asked the bishop here, when he felt better, he asked the bishop here if he could be appointed temporarily to an assignment in the parish here in Cork. Mm. The bishop here in Cork would have contacted his diocese back in England and checked his credentials and checked all the formalities and all the paperwork and got his full record. And there was no indication at all at that point that he had the troubled history or that he had done the harm that we now know that he did, but that which was a couple of decades earlier when he was a young man.
Mm.
So Bishop here in Cork would have appointed him to St. Patrick's Parish in the Low Road at the time. And a couple of years later, he was transferred down to Glaunthan Parish. And it was while he was in Glaunthan Parish that the bishop here in Cork then was then contacted by the local Gardaí to say they had been contacted by the police in England who were seeking to interview him.
Mm.
So that was in 1999, which is 7 years later.
Mm-hmm. And I know he went voluntarily to the UK saying that he wished to clear his name, ended up admitting offences. This second time, of course, the more recent one, he was actually extradited and the police from London came to get him. But in the earlier cases, can I just ask, because I'm a little bit confused, because there was one victim who finally found the courage to tell his parents about the abuse, age 10. Apparently the church authorities made him meet Murphy and to forgive Murphy. And the impression that we get from that is, way back then, even though the Cork bishop knew nothing about this at all, the church in England seemed to be sweeping it under the carpet then, would you think?
It depends on what you mean by church, I suppose. Like, there's a possibility, you see, that person who is now an adult is obviously talking about a time probably 40 years ago now when he was a child. And it looks like, I mean, this obviously all happened in London, so I'm not privy to the precise details, but it looks to me, to my reading of it, that he brought a complaint to the local priest.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and it looks like that priest then did not communicate that issue to the diocese at the time.
Up the chain of command, yeah.
Because
that was part of an investigation into the abuse of at least 11 boys aged from 5 to 11 years old between 75 and 88. And all
of
that,
that's the investigation that was undertaken recently by the London police.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I suppose my question really is, how do we know that while Murphy was in two different parishes in Cork, that he wasn't abusing children?
The honest truth, Neil, is we don't. I hope and pray that he wasn't. But if there is somebody who has a concern or who has information, I would encourage them to come forward to the Gardaí, to Tuzla, or if they want support from the diocese will be happy to assist them as well. Now, at the time that he pleaded guilty back in the year 2000, the bishop issued a statement in both of those parishes, which was read by all of the priests, and there was significant media coverage then as well. And the diocese then invited people who might have a concern to come forward. At that point, nobody did, and nobody has come forward with any information since. Mm. That does not mean, of course, that he didn't do any harm.
Okay. So maybe he didn't, and maybe he didn't, or maybe he did and people weren't prepared to come forward at that stage.
Exactly. And so it's a very personal... I know from having met people over the years who have been through that incredibly traumatic experience in their childhood, that it's a real significant step. And, you know, you can tell when somebody reaches a point of readiness. They only know that point themselves, and they want to come forward and want to get help. And that's irrespective of who has abused them or who has hurt them.
Okay.
The same issue arises for people. So if there is somebody listening who is carrying a worry or carrying a concern or carrying an experience like that, I would always encourage them to please know that there is help and that there is support available, and that they will be given every support that's needed. If there's anybody looking to contact the diocese about this, there's that statement from the diocese, and a link to the Director of Safeguarding is on the diocesan website, which is corkandross.org.
Very simple then, corkandross.org.
Ross.org. And there's a link there that somebody can click and they'll get a phone number and they'll get an email address if someone wants to make contact.
Thank you for that, Tom. He's going back to jail now for 30 months, my apologies, for more proven allegations against him. And during some of that court reporting, he was described by the victims, who were children at the time, as a wolf in sheep's clothing. He would apparently interest himself and inveigle himself into youth groups, Boy Scouts groups and things like that, and then molest and abuse children. Do you know if he was involved in any youth groups or Boy Scouts or any organisations involving football or any sporting activity amongst children when he was in Cork?
I don't know that he had any official role in any of those groups, but that's not to say that, you know, he would have been free to go to matches, he would have been free to go to activities that families and young people were participating in, just like everybody else was. So, but I don't believe that he had any official role as a mentor or anything like that in any organization like that. He would have been serving as a curate in the parish. There would have been other priests in both of the parishes at the time. And what precise contact he would have had with people was probably the same contact as any curate or parish priest might have had at that point.
No, but some priests would very much involve themselves very rightly and very properly within groups like that. I remember from my own childhood, it could be with altar boys or Boy Scouts, or it could be the local football team or different activities around the parish. But you can't say in his regard. One of the reasons I ask is, in the first trial, English police were saying that they feared that he may have, that because of his pattern of behaviour, that he may have molested children during his 10 years in Cork. They believed that he committed hundreds, and this is a quote from one of the detective constables, he may even have committed thousands or more assaults on young boys. Isn't it shocking?
It's absolutely shocking. There's no words for it, to be quite honest. At the same time, we know at this stage, sadly, that this is a pattern with many people, irrespective of their background, irrespective of their profession. There's a small minority of people who have a predilection to prey on children and are capable of doing terrible harm and terrible hurt. And that's irrespective of what career they're in. And I think the pattern in this case is not very different to, sadly, many others that we've seen in other walks of life as well.
Okay, and I just want to pick you up on that, because it was just something that I was thinking about earlier, as to whether historically over the years we wouldn't have had the same amount of attention or spotlight shone on abuser priests as, say, for instance, in any other faith, really. Correct me if I'm wrong there. One wouldn't really see this in other ministries, say Protestant or Presbyterian or, others around the world. Why would that be, do you think? Is it the whole celibacy? I can't understand it to be celibacy.
Neil, I suppose we also need to, for the sake of many people who are listening as well, we have to hold on to the fact that the biggest percentage of people who sadly perpetrate abuse on children are actually family members.
Well, I know, but the light has shone so often and has damaged the Catholic Church so much. I'm just curious as to why you think that is.
I think it's because people have also known and experienced, sadly, that in many cases when it came to light 20, 30, 40 years ago, the Catholic Church handled the allegations very poorly as an organization. And I think it doubled and tripled the hurt for people when people discovered that not only were people abused, but that in some cases the abuse was covered up, it wasn't recognized, people weren't supported, people weren't helped. And I think that's what added the extra attention to the Catholic Church.
In the case of the man we're discussing now, James Murphy, incidentally, was it somebody that you ever knew or ever met, I wonder?
I would probably only have met him occasionally at some diocesan meetings in the period that he was in ministry. The first part of his period, I was actually outside the diocese, I was abroad. So we didn't overlap in any parish or in any area, so I wouldn't have known him personally.
Okay, because just before we finish, there was that period of 10 years when he was in Cork, of course.
Eight years in Cork.
And retired for a subsequent length of time now, somewhere in the Mallow area. Again, much of that time is unaccounted for with regards to his activity, you know. Again, you would say that people, if they have concerns, to come forward.
Absolutely. We know at this stage that it's a very difficult and painful thing to do, but we also know that it is the best thing to do. We also know that people carrying pain like this, the best thing to do is to get support and get the help, and there is healing available. Ireland is in a good place now in that regard. There are a lot of professional bodies and a lot of organizations that are happy to support and help people and to give them the benefit of all of the learnings that's been done very painfully in the last number of decades.
I do know, Tom, that when I, you know, speak about this on air or subjects like this on air, that people will be very annoyed at a sentence of 31 months this time and 30 months 24 years ago. Do you think the sentencing is enough?
I have no idea, Neil, as to how the judges arrived at those conclusions. And, you know, you'd have to sit through the details of the court. And even then, I wouldn't be competent to judge or to make a comment on what a judge discerns is the appropriate sentence. You know, that's always a difficult issue, especially when people are traumatically hurt and are in pain. People's instinct sometimes is to have the other person have an extended period of detention, but there are all kinds of factors that influence what sentences come down from judges,
including perhaps
in our own country.
Murphy's
as well
age, he's 77 years old. Who knows whether that was a factor? I don't know.
Yeah, and those factors are factored in here at home as well as in the UK.
Okay. Appreciate you taking the call, Father Tom, as always. Father Tom Hayes, thank you for talking to us this morning.
Thanks, Neil.
More on this after the break. Text 0868104106.
Call Neil now. 0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
By WhatsApp, I'm joined by Deirdre Kenny, CEO of 1&4. Deirdre, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
I hope you maybe had an opportunity to hear my conversation with the Diocese of Cork representative just before the break.
Yes. Yes, Father Tom Hayes, yeah. I did.
Because he said, I need to remind you, he said that, the most cases of abuse against children happen within the home. So while I would acknowledge that statistic, my conversation with him had to do with clerical abuse. Do you have a statistic that we could actually cling on to with regards to the percentage of people that you would deal with who've gone through this kind of trauma at the hands of a priest?
Yes. Yes, Neil, I suppose in 1&4, traditionally, a lot of our work would have been in relation to clerical sexual abuse. And certainly in the last year and a half, partly because of the Blackrock Boys documentary and the revelations about schools, that percentage for 1&4 is at about 35% of the clients that we engage with will have had experience to be loose in a clerical setting, whether that's a school or a diocese or a religious order. So the number has gone up more recently, but certainly would have always been a huge part of the work that One in Four does.
So a documentary like that, you're saying, in itself will automatically prompt more people to come forward who were the yes. victims of abuse at the hands of a priest when they were, and again, in some of the cases with regards to James Murphy, maybe 8, 9, 10, 11 years old.
Exactly. And again, this report or even this conversation will often resonate with people. It may catapult them into very dark memories of what's happened. And, you know, I suppose the impulse is to bury those feelings because they'll often have been buried for decades. And often it gets to a point where someone feels like they can't contain it anymore and they need to talk to someone, or they need that acknowledgement maybe that has been described in that report about the court and how, you know, the police responded. So it often gets to the point where people just can't manage the hurt anymore and they feel like they need to reach out. If they can identify with the story, that often helps. So yes, we will always see an increase in people reaching out to us when these conversations go public, which is a really important part.
And of course, your role is so important in helping people with regards to counselling and aspects like that. Do you also encourage a visit and a complaint to One Garda Síochána?
Yeah, look, it's a very personal decision. In One in Four, we have what we call an advocacy service, and essentially it's there with trained professionals who understand the impact of abuse to have a conversation with individuals who maybe have come forward for the first time. It might be the first time they disclose to anyone, and it's really to explore their options. The prospect of going to an authority, whether it's the Guards or TUSLA or even the diocese, can be really scary for people. They often, there's an underlying fear of not being believed, and often that feels like it's too much. So a conversation with someone who understands will often be very helpful.
I mean, we are, in this case of the ex-priest James Murphy, we are talking about a serial predator over many decades. One of the worries, of course, is that he was also a parish priest on Leaside for 10 years. But I was just looking at some of the research into this earlier on this morning, and this is from a report 10 years ago when Pope Francis said that, worse to the fact that one in 50 priests is a paedophile. And if you look at the 420,000 priests around the world, that would indicate that over 8,000 of them fall into that category. That's shocking, isn't it?
It is really shocking, absolutely. And especially when you consider the amount of access a priest may have to communities and vulnerable individuals, that is very worrying.
Do you have any thoughts at all on the sentencing with regards to James Murphy? You got 30 months. He was before the courts for numerous sexual violations against children and got 30 months, and back before the courts again recently where he got 31 months. I mean, many people listening to this would say, in spite of his age, being in his 70s, it's very low.
It is, and it's very difficult. I don't necessarily know the details of this case. Often what we find here is because it's a number of often decades before people come forward, the law that applied at the time is the only law available to the judge to sentence the individual. If that crime was to happen now, there might be a much lengthier sentence applied. So often judges are using the law retrospectively. They can't, you know, apply a sentence now. So even in Ireland, we'd have indecent assault.
I see what you're saying. So the sentence would have to be based on the year of the offences.
Yeah, so if the crime at the time had a sentence of 2 to 5 years, then that's the sentence that applied. Whereas that crime now might, the sentence might be increased considerably because the law now is different. So you can't be, a sentence can't be applied that didn't exist at the time. It has to be, you know. So again, that's one of the reasons, you know, you'll often see, even in Irish courts, that the sentences seem very low. So because it's a historic case rather
and
than
the
a
historic
current.
Case would be based on the historical sentencing at the time of it. Does that deter people
exactly.
then? I mean, when people come to you as adults and having to revisit the awful atrocities that happened to them as children, are they kind of slowed because they don't want this to go to court, because they might be named, or you know, they might feel as if they have the tables turned on them. They might be afraid.
It certainly comes up in conversation. There is a fear very much of not being believed or not being taken seriously. But I have to say the guards will often quell those fears very quickly once somebody meets a guard and understands that, you know, they take it seriously. The courts, I guess it's not the most ideal place to deal with these issues, but it is important. And it is, as people become to, once they get involved, they understand it's only part of the process. It can't alleviate all the pain and suffering, but it can help to bring about acknowledgement. Now, when somebody admits the crime, that obviously makes it less stressful for a survivor. But at the same time, the sentencing will never equate to the pain and suffering that someone has experienced. But the acknowledgement, I suppose, that a court process can bring about will often assist somebody. But again, it varies for everyone. I'd hate to say that, you know, everybody feels the same way about it. They certainly don't.
And I know that you can't talk about any of the individuals that you deal with and help. Obviously, I respect that. But in general terms, we're talking about a serial predator in the case of what we're discussing this morning. And the worry is that he had a period of time in Cork. But is it typical that you would find an individual like that also wishing to be involved in the scouts or football teams or youth groups and things like that?
Certainly the stories that survivors have told publicly over the last number of decades will describe similar situations that people who cause sexually harmful, you know, behaviour to children will ingratiate themselves into communities, into youth groups, into scouting. And that's why I suppose now it's important that all those organisations have very clear safeguarding policies and procedures. And we all now know a lot more about it than we would have. But again, it's I don't necessarily think the issue has gone away. I think our awareness is much greater, but there's always need for vigilance.
Oh, certainly hasn't gone away. Court reports in the last 2 weeks show us that even in Cork alone, we've had two different cases of allegations before the courts involving people who are not in clerical, but certainly involved in scouting. And that could also indicate that more and more people are willing to come forward and be heard.
Exactly. And I think over the last number of decades, thanks to many of the survivors in, you know, the 90s and the noughties who came forward and were willing to speak publicly, it encourages other people. And I think there's an awful lot more knowledge that professionals have now around what it's like Father Tom Hayes described earlier. The diocese understand more now about what survivors are going through and what it might be like for them to have to come forward. So there is a lot more sensitivity. That doesn't make it a whole lot easier for someone to make the decision to come forward. But hopefully when they do, they get the response they deserve and they get the support they need.
And the support from good organisations like your own at 1 in 4. Deirdre, thank you so much for taking the call this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Deirdre Neil.
Kenny, the CEO of 1 in 4. I have some very important numbers for you as well. 1 in 4 end the trauma or help to try and end the trauma of childhood sexual abuse. It's a Dublin number, 01-6624-070. That's 01-6624-070. And the Rape Crisis Helpline is always available on 1-800 number 77-8888. 1-800-77-8888. Listen, can I also acknowledge, because I know that there will be those saying, again, it's bashing the Catholic Church and it's bashing priests. Could I just maybe finish this part of the conversation by saying one would need to acknowledge the thousands and tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of priests over the decades who did good work and were there in the community just to help and to administer to their parishioners and never put a foot wrong. That has to be acknowledged. We are talking about a minority, a very small minority percentage-wise of priests who were predators. Unfortunately, these stories and others like them did tarnish the Catholic Church, and maybe there was a cleansing period needed for the Church to come back and rebuild again after all of the evidence of the last 50 or 60 years. But I just wanted to acknowledge that we aren't talking about all priests, because people find it upsetting, because they know good priests, as I do too. Text 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Now, just some housekeeping on everything we were doing yesterday. Oh, incidentally, it's day four of our giveaways with the Metropole Hotel. An overnight stay for two people with dinner in the Met Bar and Restaurant. Delicious breakfast the following morning in the Riverview Restaurant. And, of course, you will spend the night in the beautiful Metropole Hotel in business now. Very soon to approach his 130th anniversary. They got 127 years clocked up already, serving delicious lunch, early birds and dinner menus as well. So last opportunity now to get a text in on where you met your partner, as in Metropole. So where you met your partner or your loved one, and the wackier, funnier stories, of course. We've had great fun with this all week. You have one final opportunity tomorrow. I'm not here tomorrow, Mick Mulcahy is, but they'll be doing day five of the Met giveaway, and that will be talk on a topic. Well, you'll be given 30 seconds to talk on a topic. So that's for people who never met a loved one or don't have any particularly interesting story to talk about meeting their loved one. So it's kind of a different mechanic tomorrow. But for today, last opportunity to text now. Text 0868104106 on how you met your loved one. You remember talking yesterday about the new Tanora Pale Ale that goes out on the market, draft Tanora Pale Ale from this weekend, the Franciscan Brewery. So this is the list of pubs that will stock it if you're out for a jar over the long weekend. Brogue, Barbarossa, Sissy's, Collins, Cronin's, Dwyer's, Fionnbarra's, Fred Zeppelin's, Henchy's, Impala, Sober Lane, the Southern Star, the Franciscan Well itself, the Roundy, the Shelburne, the Woodford, and Walsh's of Mitchelstown. So they're the chosen pubs if you want to go and sup and taste some Tanora Pale Ale. I think it's a great idea. I love it. A great Cork beverage, I'm sure. So those are the pubs for you. I pass it on for your delectation. Meanwhile, from yesterday's programme on different topics of... Oh, can I just mention, I was talking about whether or not you should or shouldn't be allowed to drink at concerts or sporting events. As the texter here says, as far as I'm aware, Kieran says, as far as I'm aware, the Aviva allow rugby fans to drink during the matches, but not soccer fans. Surely that's discrimination. I have no idea as to whether that is true, but thank you for it. Yorick says, myself and my buddy were at a soccer match, and when we went to re-enter our seats with a beer at halftime, we were refused entry to our seats with the beer. My pal got a bit animated because he'd been to a rugby match a few weeks previously and was allowed to bring his beer into his seat. So there's another example of discrimination. We were talking yesterday about the end of the Reader's Digest. Myself and Lana got chatting about that and the Encyclopedia Britannica. Many, many households had that for years. I used to have a set of Encyclopedia Britannica, but I sold them about a fortnight after I got married. There was no need for them after I realised that my wife knew everything. I know some men that call their wives Google. It's a charming reference, isn't it, to call your wife Google. And then many people then talking about issues involving the cost of living and shrinkflation. So I'll just do a couple of those. Morning, the price of ice cream has gone through the roof. Have you noticed? I paid €2.25 for an ice burger and I saw a Magnum on sale for €3.11. Rip off Ireland is rocketing, says Mike. And examples then of shrinkflation. Sausage rolls were 5 for €3. Now it's 3 for €3. It's ruining my morning. But in all seriousness, it's gone mental. I can give you examples. We have two-year-old twins and our baby shop is exactly the same every 4 days. The likes of wipes, organic kids' snacks, baby milk, nappies, juice, etc. in Lidl. It was roughly €40. Now it's 55 plus. And also, the quantities don't seem to be the same as we seem to be running out a lot quicker. With the way twins are, they are very uniformed. They eat the same, they drink the same, etc. It's crazy. Really? I would have thought as they got older, they would consume more, no? Thanks for that text. I'm just curious, because there's a dentist this morning saying that dentists are regularly whipping out 20 teeth from the mouths of two-year-olds because of all of the sugary stuff that parents are giving the children. You mentioned that on the list there for your twins, juice, you said. I wonder... you'd say juice is juice kind of one of the staples that we now give children and small babies as opposed to say water, because juice, Most of it is like 90 to 95% sugar. Just saying. And then from yesterday's program, we had lots then on animal cruelty, and I will come back to that. But there are some lovely stories of people who just wanted to say thank you. And here's one or two of them. An act of kindness I received last night in the city. I am a country boy, as in country man, with no knowledge of the city with regards to driving or directions. I was collecting my son, who was 16, from the Rochestown Park Hotel late last night, where he was being dropped by bus after returning from a trip. It's a good place to stop, actually. It's a very safe place, the Rochestown Park Hotel, great hotel. Anyway, I got totally lost on the route to the hotel, and my Google Maps was misbehaving, and the clock was ticking. So I pulled into a petrol station at my wit's end. There was a taxi driver parked up, and I asked him, could you please direct me to the Rochestown Park Hotel? After he tried to explain to me how to get to the Rochestown Park, I'd say he realised that I was lost and a lost cause. So instead he offered to drive ahead of me, which he did, all the way to the hotel. Unbelievable, I know. I have no name, but he was a true gentleman. I'd love if you could give him a mention. I would be so, so grateful, says Patrick. Absolutely. It would be great to find that taxi driver, see if we can organise maybe a couple of tickets for a Live at the Marquee gig. Whoever you are, that person, Patrick O'Riordan, was the individual who helped, and he got to the Rochestown Park Hotel to pick up his 16-year-old, but wouldn't have done so if you hadn't driven ahead and helped. And then there's just one more. So get in touch, Patrick, Patrick is the man who got lost, but the taxi driver, I don't know the name of, but get involved in the conversation if you are that taxi driver. Text story at 68104106. To the management of Woody's Blackpool and the Blackpool Shopping Centre, I would like to take a few minutes to acknowledge two of your workers and their heroic act of kindness. Myself, a friend, and our young boys were playing ball in the park across from the Blackpool Cinema when the ball ended up in the river. In a split second, there was drama in the park. It could have been anybody's soccer ball, but it was not. It was ours. My little boy had been given that particular ball last year by my childhood best friend's children, whom he adored. So the ball travelled all the way back from France and is known to be a friendship ball. So it's a special ball. I haven't heard of them before, but it's a friendship ball. Anyway, between my little boy, who was hysterical, my friend's child, who turned silent, feeling guilty over what simply was an accident, I get the other child maybe kicked it and it went into the river, and mummy, as I am myself, trying to reassure the boys, but also trying to figure out where the river was actually leading and how fast the current was. Well, I can tell you there was panic in Blackpool. Between the jigs and the reels, Alex, a Syrian refugee working in Blackpool Shopping Centre, and Kian, a young lad working for Woody's, who was quietly enjoying his break, both of them came together and braced the dodgy river and the current on the day. They had several unsuccessful attempts, but they never gave up, hopping over the barriers, bare feet, not knowing which way the river might go, using a brush, using a stick. Even my friend who ran in with an umbrella into the middle of it all, they were kind of running along with the river, I suppose. They eventually got the precious ball back, and I have photographs to back it up, incidentally. While it might not have been the most dangerous rescue of the century, it was certainly an unpleasant one, and all the more risky not knowing what one could find at the bottom of the river. Anyway, the lads kindly stepped in, and together they saw that my child was in tears, and they helped. So I just wanted to pass on my thanks to Kian and to Alex, heroes of the day. Well done and thank you. And they also sent me some photographs as well. They certainly do not have selfish attitudes, and they deserve a proper Bula Boss. And that's from Val. Well, to those two young gentlemen, well done as well. If they are listening and want to get in touch, maybe we might be able to reward them as well. Similarly, text 0868104106. So as usual, a lot of kindness on Leeside.
Call Neil now. 0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I think Google Maps are a disaster. I don't know what it is with regards to the metrics involved in Google Maps, but if you follow it, it will take you up all sorts of different boreens and supposed shortcuts and country roads and lanes and all sorts of stuff like that. Paddy agrees. Why are people still using Google and Google Maps? Use ChatGPT, including maps, Do you know that Google will be charging you soon for searching on maps, says Paddy? Well, I didn't know that, but I wouldn't be relying on it to get me on the best roads from A to B, I can tell you that. All right, I acknowledge those of you that haven't seen anything of Baby Reindeer. You're some langer. I've only watched two episodes so far of Baby Reindeer, and you're spoiling it for me and other people, says Joe. I don't think that I spoiled anything. I haven't given any information away apart from I'm wondering while watching it. And I've only, listen, I'm only about two episodes ahead of you, incidentally. I'm not even halfway there. I'm just wondering why he didn't go to the police sooner and sooner. We're not telling you the backstory. Another one here says, on Baby Reindeer, the reason he doesn't go to the police and continues to do what he does is all explained towards the end. So stick with it and enjoy. Okay, well, the point I was making this morning was one or two of the characters involved in the show, and apparently it's based on fact. I was wondering what the real people in the real life story are thinking about how they're portrayed. And I was wondering this yesterday or last night, we were chatting about it, like, what would they say about this? Well, one of them is Fiona Harvey, and I mentioned that she's now threatening to sue Netflix for the way she's portrayed in the show. And she posted up on Facebook, those wondering about my alleged involvement in that show, all I can say is that I have a tell-all book coming out soon. I'm also going to make my own show detailing my side of events. Might even do a Fiona Harvey movie and maybe an album to go with it. The possibilities are now endless. So that's what she's posting online, Fiona Harvey and in brackets lawyer. And then others are suggesting everyone is trying to figure out who Martha is in real life, when really everyone should be trying to figure out who Darian is. So for those of you that have watched it in full, you'll understand. For those that haven't watched it at all, it spoils nothing. I don't think it spoils anything. Anyway, we'll come back to calls if you don't mind. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. Dan, good morning.
Dennis,
my apologies. It says Dan here. My apologies, Dennis. My apologies. No, you just wanted to pick up on some aspects of calls that we've had in conversations on the air in the past few days, yeah?
Yeah. Just one. By the way, I like your show. I'm an admirer of yours. So
thank you so much. But anyway, let's deal with okay.
Yesterday, you had read a text from somebody or an email from somebody, a carpenter, and he worked on a housing project in South Cork, I think.
On the south side. I don't have that text in front of me, but do you recall the numbers he said that in the entire apartment complex?
I don't recall them either, but he was saying like 50 houses were being built on the estate and that five of the people in that estate were Irish, the rest were, he didn't say, right?
Okay. I don't know that it was 50. I didn't know you were going to be bringing up that statistic. I would have to find it. I don't know that it was 50, but it may have been. I'd have to check.
It's sort of irrelevant anyway. The thing that caught me was that people are going around saying these statistics, and to me, they're not true. To ask me to believe that there are 50 houses in south side of Cork built and only five are Irish.
Well, so you've said it twice now. I would have to check the figure because it does matter. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So I looked up how many refugees are coming into Ireland because that was the inference for me. Whether it was meant or not, I don't know. How many refugees get into Ireland? In 2022, people seeking asylum in Ireland was 13,651.
2022?
Yes. In 2023, it was 15,000. And this year, adding up the figures to March and projecting them into the end of the year, we might get 20,000, probably 18,000. That's the total number of asylum seekers coming into Ireland. That's the figures. Now, I want to ask everybody, do you seriously believe that 13,000 or 15,000 asylum seekers coming into Ireland is going to have a serious detrimental effect on our way of life?
You're talking, the figure you're giving out is for international protection applications only.
Who else is there?
100,000 Ukrainian war refugees.
No. Ukrainians are Ukrainians. Ukrainians came here because of a war. and we are asking them to protect us. Ukrainians are dying in Ukraine fighting Russians to protect Europe from Mr. Putin.
No, I'm not disputing that, but you need to give out, you need to give accurate figures.
Is accurate figures. Asylum seekers in Ireland, 2022, 13,651. That's the total number.
That would be international protection applications from Georgia, Algeria, Somalia. It wouldn't include people who are coming from countries like Nigeria, the African continent, or over 100,000 Ukrainian war refugees.
That's the total number coming into Ireland seeking asylum. There aren't any more.
It depends on what you mean by asylum.
Other people coming in are not seeking asylum.
What are they seeking?
I work all across Europe, and other people in Europe and France and Belgium and everything come into Ireland all the time to work. But that's because we're part of Europe, and it's not causing any problems. That's making us richer.
How do you figure it's making us richer if the total figure for 2023 for all asylum and refugees will cost 2.1 billion euro?
Let me explain something to you. Before we joined the European Union, we were a basket case. We were exporting 300,000 people a year. And it's only joining Europe that saved us. And being in Europe is a great thing for everybody. You can travel anywhere. You can go to university. You can travel to France. You can live in France. You don't need.
I understand that. That's part of the joy of being in the European Union: free movement across all borders.
Let's get back to the actual figures, and I'll repeat them. 2022, the asylum applications from people coming into Ireland was 13,600.
No, it wasn't. Up to April 2023, year on year, 141,600 people arrived into the state.
That's different.
How's it different? They all have to find somewhere to live. They all have to have access to education. They all have to have access to housing. They all have to have access to health. Many, many would have access to social welfare services and payments. Many would have children, and there would be payment for children's allowance. So in the figure isn't 15,000 at all when you talk about the lien on the purse of the taxpayers in the state.
That's not true.
Why isn't
it? If people are coming in from Europe, they come in to work. They've already got jobs before they arrive. And let me ask you another question. I won't ask you a question. You said 100,000 people are coming in per year. 77,000 Irish people left in 2023. 77,000 left.
Yes, but that means that there's been a 50% increase then on people coming into Ireland when you subtract those Irish people leaving Ireland. So it's still a plus figure. But
we need workers here. We need the people to come in and work. That's what we need. And they are here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Don't say asylum seekers are causing a problem in Ireland, because they're not. 13,651, that's not a big number. And if we can't look after 13,651 asylum seekers coming into Ireland...
You can't deal with it in isolation, Dennis, and you're just not seeing that. You're plucking one smaller figure
All of the time, people are going around Ireland and they're complaining about asylum seekers. They're not complaining about Europeans coming in. They're not complaining about Polish people being here, because Polish people were welcomed here. And most of them probably are gone home because that cost of housing here has risen so much. And the cost of housing and living in Poland is much better. And they have jobs in Poland.
I understand. Many went home and were much... I understand that. And many were needed. But you now have a situation where many of those who you're talking about, that smaller figure, to be accurate, to be honest with you, the figure this year for the asylum seekers under international protection orders will likely be 20,000. And you were aware now...
I just said that.
So yeah, they're sleeping in tents.
It doesn't matter whether they're sleeping in tents or not. The fact is that last year there was 15,000 asylum seekers entering Ireland. 15,000. And if we can't look after 15,000 people who seriously need help, then there's something wrong.
But you know, just for the record, do you know a lot of those individuals that you are talking about who come here fail their application to remain?
That's fine.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that. And if they fail their application to stay here on asylum, they probably should be sent home or sent somewhere else.
But does that not show you that there is some abuse of the situation in Ireland where people come here?
The only abuse of the situation in Ireland is the way our government handles asylum applications. They are leaving asylum applications hang for 10 years. People are in that provision system for 10 years. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Here's the text anyway. I'm a carpenter working on a social housing project in the Cork suburbs. I can tell you for a fact that 38 apartments were recently finished, and out of those 38, only 5 Irish families are in there. The rest are full of non-nationals. Let me finish it, Dennis. The rest are full of non-nationals. They are fully furnished and everything is supplied with them, turnkey. Can't come on air working to pay my taxes. You say that's fake. That's false.
What I'm saying is that you tell me now where that is and I'll go down and have a look and I'll come back to you.
How would you do? You should knock at the doors.
Okay.
Well, if I told you that I had other developers in the past or other builders tell me similar about housing estates and complexes that were being built in areas of County Cork...
I wouldn't believe him.
Okay.
I wouldn't believe him. Okay. No.
You wouldn't believe
him. And I'll tell you now, I live up here in Old Mallow Road. And close to me, I won't give you the address because it might cause a problem. Close to me, there's apartments built by the council. And those apartments have remained empty for, to my knowledge, the past 4 years.
Yeah, true. And we can have chapter and verse on that all over, and it's absolutely scandalous. Are you aware, or would you agree with the front of the Examiner this morning says that there are 75 Cork council houses now up on the bidding system, and there's been 15,000 bids on those 75 Cork council homes?
That's you mean they're for sale?
No. People who are looking for a home, and they bid, and they're on housing lists. And you're wondering, you can't seem to find any downside at all to the pressure on the state and the fact that really we need, like for instance, you go to other countries, you're going to need to have a work permit. You might have to apply for landed immigrancy, try and get into America or Canada without it, right? There are processes that you have to go through. Not rocking into Ireland via Northern Ireland with 90% of them coming across the border a lot of the time with no paperwork. You see no problems at all here.
Okay. You're saying that, but you've got to go back to the figures. The figures last year for people seeking asylum in Ireland was 15,000. Seeking asylum at 15,000. You can say that we're being inundated by people walking across the border. The figures are last year 15,000. This year it might get to 20,000. More likely it'll be 18,000. That's asylum applications in Ireland.
If we can't look after
20,000 asylum applications in Ireland per year, there's something wrong.
There's something wrong with the way the government is handling this. There's something wrong because you are taking a figure in isolation and not adding all of the numbers together.
You said asylum seekers are walking across the border in Northern Ireland and inundating us. That's not true. They may be walking across.
They're not walking. I never said they were walking across the border.
Okay. Okay. They're going in cars or buses. I don't care. They're coming across. That's not true.
What's not true? So the 90% that are presenting at the application offices on Mount Street didn't come from the UK via the north, is it?
I don't know. I'm telling you the statistics. The statistics are last year there were 15,000 asylum applications in Ireland.
Okay.
This year it might be 20.
Okay, hold on there, because listen, we've had a good back and forth there. I don't know whether you're taking much of what I'm saying on board, but just hold on there a second. John?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Do you hear that call I've had there with Dennis?
Yeah. I know a woman very well, and she's living in a brand new council estate. And she told me there about 3 or 4 months ago. This is no somebody telling
John,
you.
John. John, I don't want you to say anything that would identify any individual, group, or family.
No, I'm not identifying any individual.
Please bear that in mind.
I got this straight from the horse's mouth. And she said that in the new estate she's living in, there's about 5 or 6 houses, Irish restaurants, foreign nationals.
Of which she is one of them.
She's one of the Irish.
Sorry,
I got that from this woman. I never heard it before until she told me.
Well, it's a lie.
What is it? Yeah, this woman, she's a desperate liar. Desperate, yeah.
See, because we hear these stories, John, right? We hear these stories that could be gossip, that could be rumor. It'd have to be backed up with fact, you know?
This isn't gossip. This is a woman who I know. She works in a certain place.
All right, I don't want to know anything about that. I don't want anything about that.
No, I'm not giving her where she works anything, but she has told me this. And also, I know a non-national quite well, and he works hard, he says, and pays his taxes. He made friends with a Ukrainian, and the same guy, he says, he signed on in Ireland, France and Germany as a refugee. He spent 3 months in American holidays.
I've heard all of that, going to New York shopping and everything, but that's BS,
no,
isn't
this
it?
This is a fellow who told me his friend does it.
He what? He goes what? To America? How's he afford to do that?
I don't know.
How can you sign on in multiple European Union countries for welfare?
Look at years ago, people were coming in, going back to Poland or Czechoslovakia, wherever, coming back in here on planes and signing on and going back home again. You ask me, how did they do that?
Okay, well, you say it's fact. Others would say it's hearsay unless we could prove it. Dennis wouldn't agree, would you, Dennis?
If I heard it from somebody,
then you'd say
I heard it directly.
The only facts that I've heard presented on this thing has come from, where did I get it from? The Irish Times, Asylum in Europe organization. And the figures are, in 2022, there was 13,651 asylum applications in Ireland. In 2023, 15,000.
This year,
it might be 20, but likely to be 18. That's the only fact I've heard so far on about this issue.
Okay.
So I'm just saying,
okay,
the only thing I want to get across...
No, you're doing it again. You're just taking
asylum,
one figure when you should be cumming all of the figures.
Asylum seekers in Ireland are not a problem. The problem we have is that the government is not dealing with the asylum seekers as they should be dealt with. They're leaving them in protected accommodation for 10 years. That's not acceptable.
Okay, hold on there. Let me get Shane in the conversation here. Thank you, John. Hold on there, Dennis. Shane, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you doing?
Good, good. What's on your mind?
I'm just listening to that guy on the air, and I just think it's just soundbites from a form of deluded left liberalism in this country.
It is.
I'll tell you. I'll remind him of a couple of facts. Well, this week alone, or last week alone, I think we've hit 4,100 homeless Irish children in this country, forgotten about, not spoken 14, about.
14,000 people accessing emergency accommodation in Ireland, of which 4,000 are children.
Children, 4,100 actually, gone up from 3,700 or 4,000 on the last stat. And we've also, roughly, I think it's around 350,000, there's no definitive figure, but they estimate 350,000 couch surfers in the country. So they're the facts of what this, what's going on in this country. And when you have a floodgate opened, and it all comes down to like a left liberal policy making decisions by Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, which have just destroyed the country. They've destroyed Dublin, other surrounding counties. We can see what's happened in Wicklow, Cork, Kerry. There's many areas in the country that are affected by this. Unfortunately, the electorate are silenced in airing their concerns because they'll be referred to as far-right lunatics or whatever. But it's not working, and it won't work, and it's going to make things worse. And never mind what's happening with Rishi Sunak and his Rwanda policy, but this non-border opens the floodgates to anything and everything, all unchecked.
Dennis says so that the figure is only about 50. Hang on, it's only about 15,000. He says when you look at migration into Ireland versus emigration of Irish people overseas, it almost cancels itself out. That's what he's saying.
Well, I think there's something fundamentally wrong with your country when your children and graduates who are well-educated in your own country have to leave because they can't afford or find anywhere to live in their own country after studying and having their families. I mean, it fundamentally breaks down the family unit within this country.
You're trying to paint a picture now as if it's like the 80s when we were taking the slattery bus to London. Let me just finish the point. I mean, then there was no work, right? Interest rates were ferociously high. You couldn't even look at a mortgage then because you didn't even have a job. Now a lot of the young people are going, not all of them, but a high percentage of them, I think, are going on an adventure. They're going traveling. They want to do it now. I see it with friends of my son. See it with friends of my daughter. I see it with Mark.
That's different. Yeah,
with Kevin Galvin, who recently, went traveling with his partner, left this program, and is traveling all over the world.
Yeah.
Want to see the world.
Neil, that's fine when you're in your early 20s or in your teens and so on. But why do we have the highest number of 30-somethings and 40-somethings and now almost 50-somethings living with their parents in this country?
I know that.
Compared to Europe, we've had the highest rate of taxes in Europe. It's insane. It's not working.
I'm just making the point.
It all boils down to a deluded left liberal approach to what we're doing in this country.
Okay, Dennis, can I just put another point to you there? Things are so bad in spite of you saying that the numbers are reasonably small. It's so bad now that the government has a new initiative now to buy up or to rent all of the properties that landlords will give them, all of the properties that developers and builders will give them to house record numbers of asylum seekers. Doesn't that make the point what John is saying about social housing being given to people who are coming to live in Ireland true?
No, I think the point that I'm trying to make is very simple. The statistics are that we had 13,651 asylum applications in 2022, 15,000 in 2023.
Why do you keep saying that?
Because that's the figures.
Okay, but why do you keep giving out one figure when it's a much higher figure that is putting so much pressure on the state now? And I hate talking about people as commodities. That the government now wants to buy up everything. Builders, developers, landlords, we'll take whatever you have. Front page of the Independent this morning to house record numbers of asylum seekers. You're just not willing to acknowledge that.
No, I am, and I said it before. The reason we have a problem is that the government are not dealing with asylum seekers in an efficient way. And what they're doing is that they're putting those people into protected accommodation for 10 years. If you take 15,000 or 20,000 applications and you say you keep them for 10 years, that's 150,000 or 200,000.
That's an interesting point.
That's the people that they want the house.
Okay. So you do know that Ireland's population in 2002 was around 3.9 million. Now, 20 years on, it's nearly 5.5 million.
Neil?
Yeah.
Can I just remind them?
Let me just remind them.
We have, can I just remind them of one thing? We have a broken hospital service. We have a broken HSC for 20 years now or more. And we now, just let me say this, we now have around 1 million people out of a population of 5.5 million almost. We've now 1 in 5 people waiting on a hospital waiting list. And some of them will never get care.
But come here to me. Come here to me. Hang on a second. That's right. But hang on a second.
It's not working.
It was exactly the same 5 years ago before we had a single Ukrainian war refugee here.
No, it was slightly less.
It was chaotic.
But okay,
to blame somebody coming from Ukraine or somebody wanting to come over here and start a new life and knuckle down and work hard, that's not fair. It was as bad 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I can tell you.
I believe there's something fundamentally wrong with your country when you have to constantly offload effectively your own citizens and your own children and your own graduates who are well educated in this country and effectively have them replaced by refugee and asylum seekers when you have already got a broken system. You can't even use the people that you have graduating in the system to fix the system or help try and use that approach and form a life and keep a family unit in place in your own country. There is no country, there is no border, there are no borders at the moment, and it's a shambles. So it's a deluded left liberal ideology that's breaking, and it's evident to everybody. We see it all over the country. We've seen it in County Clare, we see it in Kerry, we see it in Cork, we see it in Dublin, and we now see it in Wicklow. Tell me what's working.
The thing is, these problems are not asylum seekers, because we don't have the numbers of asylum seekers coming into Ireland to create those problems. The last thing that I would say is you're talking.
But that's
about
not true. That's not true. If there's a new drive to buy and rent any property available to house record numbers of asylum seekers,
because the government are not dealing with the problem as they should deal with them. That's the problem. The government is the problem. Let me remind you of the
64 units that were built in Mahon. This is the modular homes at a cost of €145,000 each.
We should have more modular homes to help the housing.
But the texter's point is they weren't built for Irish people.
Let me give you one statistic that I think is very good. Munster is the same size as Holland. Holland has, I think, I don't have a figure in front of me, but I think 30 million people. Munster has 500,000 people.
Sure, that couldn't be right. Jenny Mack, we nearly have that in the county of Cork alone.
That is right.
500,000. Okay, I'll take your word for it. We'll double check it. Okay. I'm going to move on. I got some more calls. We gave a good time this morning, Dennis, in fairness, but I need to take an ad break. Come back after the break. Text 0868104106. Get on the air.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Part of the conversation, text 0868104106. Dennis said the population of Munster was 500,000. I just checked it and it said geographically Munster covers a very large area, nearly 10,000 square miles, and has a population of 1,373,346 people, with the most populated city in Munster being Cork, 1.3 million. So keep them coming. Text 0868104106. Somebody else decides to have a pop saying Anne says that anybody who's anywhere critical of refugees or asylum seekers, me included, is nothing but a racist. Of course, everybody gets thrown under the bus of being called racist these days. It's like everybody who has an opinion now is being labelled as being far right. I think there's an awful lot of people who are far from racist, but looking at the numbers or the chaos or the pressure, well, those people are probably more accurately called realists rather than racists. And I was talking yesterday about all of the different taxation that comes upon us, and the latest one, of course, being carbon tax. And, why in the name of God we'd ever bother with any kind of carbon tax when you look at world populations like America, South America, China, places like Russia and India that are the biggest polluters on the planet. So it's a massive response to that as well. So thank you for all of those. Keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. You could be blinded with statistics, actually. You could be back and forth with numbers coming in, numbers going out, amounts of money. I've been given a chapter and verse for the last, I don't know how long. And then day after day, we have a government in chaos trying to come up with new ideas to try and solve a problem that they're now acknowledging they didn't see coming early enough, I suppose. So keep it coming. Text 0868 104 106. Massive response also on animal cruelty from those stories from yesterday. I've been homeless for over a year. The council offered me an apartment, but I had to turn it down as I couldn't bring my XL bully, who is not on the restricted list. I will never give up my dog. That's amazing. That is just amazing. Your love of your pet and your dog led you to turning down housing. Even though you've been homeless for a year, were offered an apartment and you turned it down. There are more dogs in Carrigaline now, and the paths and greens are destroyed with their poo. If the owners do pick up the poo, they lob the bag into the gardens. Imagine that. Oh, for God's sake. You could handbag dog owners, please. Shorten their leads as people are passing them. I have a fear of dogs since I was a child, and I have to step off paths to pass them. I'm scared I'll trip and fall as a result. I'm in my 70s, and it is depriving me of my daily walk. Family law should be the first change in focus. I have a dog, and it's awful what's going on, but this country has serious issues protecting children. Never mind the pets, children from their abusive parents. If European courts would have a look at Irish family law, this country would have seriously bad international exposure as to how we treat our children. I know that you can't read much of this out, but unfortunately at this moment in time, I'm in the process of having to take a neighbour to court. And the wardens and the powers that be can't do anything to stop this person in my particular estate, who has a lot of dogs, constantly barking and howling to the point where we can't even open the windows. It is like a living hell, absolute hell. When I ring dog wardens, like your listener said, because they have a shelter, because they have water, because the dog's being looked after, they can't do anything about it. I know what you're saying, that all those boxes will be ticked, but all day long, in spite of that, the torture of big dogs continually barking. I totally disagree with the chap talking about getting a dog. I have tried every rescue centre close to me in Cork City, and I had our last dog until he was 18 years old. You show me a nice small dog and I'm willing to pay them €150 for the dog. I've had dogs all my life, but because our last dog left us brokenhearted, it has taken us as a family 5 years now to be ready to get another dog to love. Dogs are animals, yes, but once you bring this dog into your home, that dog is part of the family. I've looked at Dogs Trust in Dublin. They want €350 for a dog. I refuse to buy a dog from a dog breeder because I believe I'm aiding the puppy farming that's hurting beautiful animals. I'm looking for a small terrier-sized dog. The only thing I need is a dog young enough to be able to buy insurance for, as in pet insurance. I'm retired. 3 adults live in our house. I've checked all of these charities and rescues. And if you look, every small dog is either old, as in 6 years plus, or all the small dogs are booked already. Don't give up my details. I was in a Circle K, stopped on the way to Dublin last week. I witnessed 2 dogs starving, walking around outside the shop. One of the dogs you could see just gave birth, and the other was starving, limping and hopping. As I approached my car, I saw a halting sign across the road with another dog tied with a rope and a horse in a small hut also tied up. The cruelty is so sad. These animals are clearly being mistreated and starved, and they are a danger to people entering the shop as they're walking up to you looking for food. I hope someone listening could help these poor dogs. This is Circle K near Cashel. And there's many more like that, so keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106 after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868
104 106. The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, I got about 2 minutes this side of 11, so calls after 11 o'clock. Be part of the conversation. Pick up the phone, 0818 104 106. Great to see Michael McGrath telling us that the majority of Irish people don't condone the attacks on the political people's homes, yet the majority of Irish people don't agree with their immigration policy either. So go figure that one. Yeah, you can disagree, but taking it to someone's home is a step too far, I believe. It's not the UK that is causing this issue, it's the EU and France, because of trafficking people from France to the UK. We were laughing that they were flooding the UK, saying that's what happens when you leave the EU. There's a saying, what goes around comes around. Oh, and by the way, Rwanda has some fabulous holiday hotels and people do go there on sun holidays. The point being, it ain't such a bad place, I suppose. All this money that is being spent, and there are still Irish working families living in hotels and hotel bedrooms, or indeed some on the street. They're not spending it on building homes for them, are they? Now, that a text like that, according to the likes of Anne, would be deemed as being racist, where it's actually just being realist. People are not coming to Ireland in large numbers because of the UK's policy. They're coming to Ireland in large numbers because of the Irish immigration policy. That this needs to be said in itself is astonishing. One of your recent callers does not think the years of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael led it to this place. Does he not think that adding thousands of immigrants to our already under pressure housing system will do more damage than good? I'm wondering why Ireland should facilitate illegal immigrants in the first place and accommodate and feed them. Who does he think pays the price for these reckless policies? I suppose that's a text that's addressed to Dennis from earlier on. People need to wake up. It's our children and our grandchildren that will pay the price. One thing this government is good is divide and conquer. They through the complicit media, polarise every debate, whether it's abortion or immigration. So you're either pro-open borders, and if you're not, you're a far-right racist. By the way, just to clarify, I have loads of friends of all nationalities, religions and races. I'm not trying to be unkind, but I'm trying to say that lots of young single men who go unchecked with a different outlook on life can possibly be quite dangerous. Please accept that for what it is and not anything else. So keep those coming. Pick up the phone, 0818 104 106. We have all that. And of course, we're into day four of our Met giveaway, an overnight for two of you at the Metropole Hotel. All that after 11.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
With a lot of different texts and topics. This is more to do with people's driving habits and things like that. I have a large group of friends and side friends, and I can tell you that at least 30% of the group that I know, who are all ages, smoke marijuana regularly and drive under the influence of marijuana. I'm a father, and so are a lot of them, and I've spoken to them about it. I've gotten angry with them at times, and I've stepped back my friendship from them over the years because of this kind of behaviour. They don't care and will not stop getting high and driving their cars. Also, they drive with their own kids and families in the cars, morning, noon and night. I smoke occasionally, as in marijuana, at parties or in situations where I'm no danger to anyone, but never in a vehicle or never during the day. I can tell you that 100% it influences your state of mind, your awareness and your response time. I told these people who smoke, as in cannabis, and drive, that if they ever killed someone because of their decision, that they would be in serious trouble. It goes on in one ear with them and out the other. It is frightening and dangerous at times. Let's get real, people, because lives are at stake. So there's anecdotal evidence from somebody themselves who has friends who are drug-influenced drivers. And then back to earlier this morning, and much of this started with my conversation with Dennis. One texter says he is delusional. I will be switching off because he is delusional. I wouldn't say that. I think that one of the things that maybe I found a little bit exasperating was Dennis just wanted to fixate just on one number, just one figure, rather than the cumulative numbers when you add them all together and the pressure because of that. Hi, Neil. When women and girls are statistically identified as being at disproportionately higher risk of sexual assault at the hands of male rapists, we rightly acknowledge this reality, and we discuss this reality politically and in the media, with the powers that be going so far as to propose specific laws and targeted consent classes for primary school children. Well, with that in mind, why is it, when discussing the evil of clerical sexual abuse, the same political establishment and the media brush over the no less relevant statistics that virtually every incident of clerical sexual abuse was committed against young male victims at the hands of older male rapists? This is male-on-male sexual assault. Is there another term for that? Are we serious and sincere about tackling the scourge of rape and sexual abuse, or are certain protected categories of society immune to criticism? It seems we are happy to categorize rapists into groups and openly discuss the contributory factors of these groups on the crimes of the rapist, when these groups are some combination of white, male, heterosexual or native, for example, when the guilty along to other certain groups, we stubbornly refuse to do likewise. Does our outrage against rape and sexual abuse end where identity politics begins? I'm happy to read that out because you put a lot of effort into it, Richie. But what section of covering these stories is brushed under the carpet? You couldn't say that it is rape and sexual assault and paedophilia involving clerics, surely, because that was never more in the news. And that is reported time and time and time again. Anyway, do come back to me on that one. What an easy interview you gave the priest, Father Tom Hayes, the usual tripe from the Catholic Church. You asked him, was the sentence long enough? It was a simple enough question. He wouldn't or couldn't give a simple answer of yes or no, says Paul in Toker. Many would say in the case of the ex-priest James Murphy, lock him up and throw away the key. That's what Eileen said, rather than a 31-month sentence for what he did. Anyway, calls on the way after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, I will get to... just hold on, I'll talk to Finbar in a second, but I was talking this morning about 15,000 different homes, or sorry, 15,000 different people or families are bidding for 75 Cork council houses. That's how chaotic it has got. Not everybody is kind in that regard, though. There are 66,000 on the HAP Facebook group all looking for free houses. How is that right in a country where we're supposed to have full employment? The majority of these people are encouraged at the age of 18 to go on a housing list. It's a joke of a country. Too many now looking for handouts. People need to get out and work. So I say that's somewhat unkind, because if you look at the cost of a house now, think about even trying to get a deposit together. People who might be on minimum wage, an awful lot of them are very low wages. And you have two people who are a couple madly in love and happy, but both on low wages. How in the name of God could they ever get anywhere near buying their own house? So that's not very kind to throw everybody under the bus like that. Nor is it kind when you look at the cost of rent. I mean, there was a time when the cost of rent would have been maybe a third, certainly no more than a half the cost of a mortgage for a three-bedroom semi. It's the other way around now. It is cheaper to finance and fund a mortgage now than it ever would be to pay a monthly rent for a house or an apartment, I can tell you that. Another one or two. I am one of six Irish living in a new housing estate of 28 units, 12 years on the housing list. This is a fact. Can't come on air. I'm working to pay taxes. So somebody else saying that they are one of six Irish living in a housing estate of 28. So 6 out of 28. Tell your caller about Leo's Ireland. I don't understand this one. It's some kind of a scheme for a housing estate in Clondalkin. Sorry, you'll have to tell me more about that. What about all the Ukrainians that we have had to bring in and give accommodation to? That's over 100,000 plus that have to be housed and financially supported. Does Dennis think these numbers don't really count? Somebody else is suggesting that Dennis before 11 is talking out of his hat. Asylum seekers are different to refugees. He needs to realise that. The 140,000 number doesn't include Europeans coming here to work. How can he not understand that we can't look after 20,000 asylum seekers when there's only 75 homes for 15,000 people in Cork alone? But Dennis has made up his mind, and his mind is closed. He hasn't a clue. So keep those coming. Text 0868104106. Bear in mind also, if you want to send me a voice note rather than a text, you can send me a WhatsApp voice note. Just send the voice note on your WhatsApp app to 0868104106, and we can play it out on the air for you to get involved in the conversation that way. Somebody that did get involved in the conversation some time back was Finbar Sheehan. Now, Finbar had a stroke. You had him on the air in February, very upset. And I wanted, or at least he came back to me because he wanted to touch base again, just to update on how life is going for him. But back at the time, he was very upset and he was very, very frustrated. He was in hospital at the time, and this is just 30 seconds of the audio from back then.
I tell you, it's going on in Cork University as well at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's 2024.
Yeah, I know.
The government has agreed to people around the dome.
Yeah.
And let me go. When I need care now, there's nobody there for me. I'd rather die now the way I am.
Yeah. And
physio's
important, access to the bathroom is important.
I'm thrown here in a bed.
I know.
I'm thrown here in a bed like a piece of rubbish.
Okay, that was, by God, that was in February. Finbar, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you?
That was in February. How are you feeling now, pal? How's life?
Our life is struggle, Neil, you know. It's a bit of a struggle, you know, but I'm getting there.
Your speech is better, clearly. So whatever you're doing is working, yeah?
Yeah, it is. It's a lot better than what it was, you know.
How long were you in the... Was it the COH?
COH, yeah. Near enough 10 weeks as a...
10 weeks. And that 10 weeks, would that involve speech therapy, physio, things like that?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it would have, yeah.
And did it improve after our chat on the air?
Well, the physio did, and... getting speech therapy and everything did, but the care, no.
You say the level of care didn't. In what way, Finbar?
Yeah, just management ignoring what I was taking on board, you know. I had meetings with them, and it's just, you know, honestly, I sit here and think of all the boys that were with me, you know, when I was inside there, you know. Are they being properly looked after?
Are they?
Yeah. Well, I've touched base with a few people, you know, friends and families, you know, and just be inquiring about them, you know. So the way just they'd be on your mind, you know.
What would you have seen that would lead you to be concerned? You said in your updated text, what I witnessed would put the hairs on the back of your head standing.
Just people hanging out beds and people falling over beds and stuff, you know, and people being put to bed early, even though they wouldn't want to have, you know, because there's not enough, the water's not adequately staffed, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and also around medications and stuff, you know.
What do you mean medication? People, obviously that's part of being in hospital, is to receive medication.
Well, I'm a diabetic, Neil, as I thought. I don't know if I taught you that, but one night in particular, there was no insulin pin there for me, and also had to go around other wallets to see if the insulin was there, so I could be in bed. So my insulin went out to the pharmacy and stuff.
No? Yeah. There was people being left sitting on chairs for hours on end. I'm just saying, sometimes it's kind of nice to get out of bed too, do you know what I mean?
I know, yeah, but Neil, if you're a patient that has low blood pressure and puts it down in the chair and watch him falling over.
Would he fall off the chair?
No, he'd be fine. There'd be a table in front of him and you'll be watching him struggling to keep his body up, you know, because...
Right. No, I get the impression that while you were there, you were clearly concerned and looking out for other patients, that they wouldn't do damage to themselves.
I would, yeah, because you should never put a patient sitting on a chair when their blood pressure is low.
Are we talking about elderly people in this case, is it?
Yes. What I feel is, Neil, you know, if you're elderly, you're kind of forgotten about there, you know. I saw a man eat his porridge with his fingers, you know, because it was no keratin, just they had to put a spoon in his hand, you know, to eat his breakfast, you know.
Was it a case that he wasn't able to use the spoon himself, or I'm just curious, or what?
Well, sure, breakfast would be dropped in front of people and no spoon put in his hand, you know, like.
Okay, so breakfast. Yeah, I've heard that meals can be just dropped, nobody checks to see whether the patient is capable of eating the breakfast themselves or the lunch.
Like I've been told, like a stroke unit is not a high dependency ward, but I've been in contact with a politician about getting raised and gone, you know.
the standard of care.
Yeah, and the HSC had come back, and he wanted to put all ministers' questions in the dot, right? Listen to this, Tony. And I've been told that a stroke unit is not a high dependency ward, which is thought to be stupid, like, because anyone that has a stroke is incapacitated doing things, you know.
So do you know the man, say, for instance, that was eating his porridge with his fingers, would he have been somebody who had suffered a stroke?
Yes.
Okay. And yeah. the man whose dad, the man, he's disappearing off my screen here, you know, the Albanian man in the unit who had a habit of pulling out the tube from his nose at night, he was falling out of the bed, and did his son tell you at one stage he was 2 hours on the floor?
Yeah, he reckons that he was 2 hours on the floor, you know.
How does he know that?
Anyway, he
says he was, when it was, what, 2 hours before somebody noticed, is it?
He the concept of pulling out the tube, or reason why the feeding tube, and they'd have to wait for him to get scanned and stuff, and his medication was in late. And, like, Neil, honestly, you know, I sit right here at night and everything from what is going on there, you know. It's not right, you know. And I had managed, I had duty managers up to me in the hospital.
Duty managers.
And they were saying, yeah, and they were saying, like, oh, everything was softer the last time your plans were made. But maybe I was softer, but I felt these people.
Did you feel you were awkward? Did you get the impression they thought you were awkward?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I felt like I was a pariah, you know, inside there, you know. Like, Neil, I had a meeting with a duty manager one day. I was in this open unit, you know. And I told them at the meeting, at the end of the meeting, that I was going to be watching around the care of patients, you know.
Yeah.
I had my dinner, and after my dinner, I was moved to a two-bed unit, you know.
Right.
Because,
yeah.
And, like, so I felt I was being, like, I felt I was, because I gave him the warning that I was going to watch him out of care, you know.
You do know that there is a staffing embargo. There is a shocking shortage of staff, that the staff are as upset as the patients a lot of the time. Because they have a duty of care, and they're frustrated, and, you know, they're...
They are
concerned themselves, the staff, in fairness to them.
I know that, but, like, what I'm saying is, Neil, right, this is supposed to be a centre of excellence in Cork, right? They downgraded all small hospitals, and they said this was supposed to be a centre of excellence. It is not a centre of excellence in Cork.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Martin is the tarnisher. Like, I used to look at officially opened by Micheál Martin, his stroke unit in Cork, right? You go in the main reception in the CUH, patient first, patient care. There's a thing up in the chat, there's a chapter up in the wall.
Mm.
It's not happening.
Okay.
It's not happening.
Okay. But in spite, I know that, and listen, I'm happy to have caught up with you, in fairness, but in spite of all of that, you did spend a lengthy period in there. You know, the physio got done, the speech therapy got done. You sound much stronger now. You sound healthier. Your speech is better. So,
like, I felt when I went down the radio, Neil, that I had to go on the radio at the station to get adequate care, you know? Or, like,
okay.
Like, what I'm saying is, like, we talk about all issues around immigration and everything. But, like, it's very important too that vulnerable people are looked after, you know? Like, this recruitment embargo is shocking, you know what I mean? What's happening?
Yeah.
I'm not blaming the full service in there, you know? But, like, this is, like, when you were HSC saying, this is not a high dependency ward, there's something seriously wrong.
Okay.
Like, you look at what happened to that girl, Eva Johnson. Right.
Sepsis. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Okay. if somebody falls out of a bed, right, after a stroke, you know, if they hit their head, do you know what happens, Neil? They're taken down then and they're scanned and they're, you have x-rays and all this, you know, but sure, that's taking service away from someone else, you know?
Yeah, like, but you have multiple. You have multiple staff. You have multiple. You have nurses covering multiple patients in multiple wards, all at the same time.
Yeah, like Neil, listen to me, right? People thought I was overacting. Like I've had horrible messages, you know, that I was draining society and everything. You know,
where'd you get those messages?
I got one from one individual.
No, is it on? Was it on social? Was it on Facebook or something?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
But like, what I'm saying, Neil, is, right, it could be anyone tomorrow, right? My dad is 81, right?
Okay.
If he got a stroke, I wouldn't be asking for him to be sent to the stroke unit in the CUH. And that's been honest.
Now, where would he go? Okay, no, I mean, I'll finish up now in a second, but where would he go then if he didn't go to the stroke unit at the CUH?
I don't know. But like, Neil, listen, right? To be honest with you, you know, like, I'm not being unreasonable when I say this. A stroke unit is a high dependency ward, and I don't give a damn what anyone says, because you lose function in your body, you lose function in your arms, and like, people have to be looked after properly.
Absolutely. Like, I 100% agree with you there.
I'll just give you one example, right? When I came on the radio, when I had wars with the Jewish manager, there was pieces of paper taped up to the door. Patient feedback forms are available to give your feedback. Like, if I was talking on my hat, why were them pieces of paper taped up to the door?
Don't know.
Do you understand what I'm saying? I do.
Well, look. You are where you are now. 10 weeks later, you sound much healthier, much stronger. I'm glad for that. But you are saying to me that if you had a stroke in the morning, you wouldn't go back there, is it?
I don't think I would.
Okay.
But Neil, I just want to finish with one point. You know, like I emailed Sinn Féin TD Thomas Gould, right? And now Thomas has been trying to raise the issues at Dáil, right? Didn't they come back with this? Oh, we can't raise this. I can see now why Fingal, Greens, Fianna Fáil are in power for so long, right? Because they have been blocked by the HSC in raising these issues, right? And they're getting a free run at power in this country, which is totally wrong. People are gagged and everything. I believe, honestly, I was sent to this unit for a reason. Like, I didn't lose my voice when I got my stroke, but a lot of the men did.
Yeah.
And, I'm
going to have to move on, Finbar, but I understand what you're saying. I really do. But I'm listening to you now, and because of the medical intervention and the staff and all of the professions within the CUH, you're much healthier now because of their help.
Yeah, but I'm just charged out to the community. I'm waiting on machines to help me to walk my hand, and I'm waiting to start physio. There's a follow-up, you know, the follow-up care afterwards, you know, is slower than what you will get in the hospital.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, listen, I know. Okay, listen, Finbar.
The dots don't join.
Okay. Leave it there for now. Do stay in touch. That's an update. Clearly, I'm okay with people being critical of the health service, but also would encourage people, if they can, to try and praise it and hear some good stories of the medical staff within our hospitals. So both are okay. Praise and criticism. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Just one interesting point there, listening to this morning's program in general. My mam up here in Tipperary is waiting 4 years for hip surgery. Her pain is so bad that she's had to go on morphine patches She went for her pre-op and it turned out that she has an irregular heartbeat, so she can't have surgery till her heart is sorted out first. Her head is totally affected by the morphine. She's so shook, looks thin, totally gaunt. It looks to me like as if my mother is dying. So if my mother is waiting 4 years for hip surgery, what happens when all of the asylum seekers, refugees start getting sick or need a surgery? The system is broken as it is and is destined to get a hell of a lot worse. Back after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, a lot of texts here regarding my conversation with Dennis, who many people seem to think was talking through his hat, but at least, well, that may be the case. But I tell you what, if there are a lot of respect for somebody to come on the air and make their point, get involved in the conversation if you disagree. Asylum seekers are different from refugees. He needs to realise that the 140,000 number doesn't include Europeans coming here to work. Dennis can't seem to understand that we can't look after 20,000 asylum seekers when there's only 75 homes for 15,000 people in Cork alone. But he's made up his mind, and it's a closed mind. Another one here sounds like one of the property owners who's making a mint from housing the illegal immigrants. He thinks we should bring more in. No, I mean, you're saying that he is talking as if, because some of those that are benefiting, of course, from Ukrainian war refugees, of course, are those that are making a serious profit from the state who are paying for the accommodation centres. That person obviously has his own... Well, no, I can't read that one out. It's not fair. I'll turn off if you, I never listen to you again if you persist on leaving people on air who don't tell the truth. Okay, blame me. Refugees in the Middle East and Africa had to come here via another European state, didn't they? Which means that they are economic migrants, full stop. We shouldn't be punished for our own geography. Economic migrants, of course, would really, in an ideal world, be applying through the legal channels to come here, and that would be for visas and work permits and what have you. The thousands of Irish who have left Ireland have left to work and better themselves. The thousands of non-Irish who have entered Ireland have come to be socially dependent on Ireland. So how can your caller say that it balances out? This is a 40% increase in the population in a 20-year period. Check the CSO stats. See for yourself. I was saying that it wasn't worse than the 80s, but somebody disagrees. It is worse than the 80s because, yes, there are jobs here now, but we're breaking our backs working and paying taxes and can't afford to put food on our table or heat the house. For those who are lucky enough to have a house to heat, renting a room in a house share is costing more than a mortgage a month, and the majority of young people won't ever afford their own home. It is depressing, and on that basis, it is worse than the early 80s. My son is an Australian citizen. He had to work, pay rent, and pay 17,000 Australian dollars to get his citizenship. Nothing there was free for him. The only way to stop this mess is for the government to grow a pair of balls and say to Europe that we've taken enough, like other countries have done in the past. And then there's loads then on HAP applications, which I hope I'll get a chance to do before I finish this morning. Otherwise, it will be could well be Tuesday. But let me take a call here because, Jason, it's very... Thanks for taking the call. Good morning. It's very hard for me because I have photographs, but people listening won't know what the photographs are. When I looked at them, I thought it was human sewage, you know, like fecal matter, human waste.
It's not sewage. No. It's hard to describe it, Neil. I thought it was oil. You know, we have...
But you know when you see a brown, when you see brown liquid like this, right, and on top of it then is kind of white foamy matter, that usually is feces and poo and urine and sewage.
Yeah, but up here where I am, Neil, there's no humans around for this. The puddles are basically in the yard where I park the vehicle, so like they're just dirty from in and out. You know?
Okay, so could it be wash off? Could it be wash off from fertilizer from farm fields?
No.
What is it then? No.
Well, that's why I took the samples, to be honest with you, Neil, because the starting point is where I parked the equipment, and I done a delivery 15 kilometres away, and it was in the water over there as well.
Is it maybe pollution that goes up into the atmosphere, gets mixed with rain, and comes back down again?
God, you know, Neil, I'm no scientist, but I'm 12 years up and down here doing this job, and I've never seen anything like that in the water.
You're a delivery truck driver.
That's right.
And this is surface water, is it?
Yes, there was none of this yellow stuff on the puddles yesterday evening when I left work, because I was refueling one of the vehicles and there was a big puddle of water beside the diesel bowser, and it was clear. I came into work this morning and all these puddles are kind of this yellow, whatever it is. I've taken a sample in two different places. I just wanted to know...
I'll share the photograph. Does it smell?
No, I don't get any smell after that. But I'm not going to be sticking up my nose or licking it or tasting it.
I know. I'm just saying from a distance even, you're not picking up any smell. And yeah. And what kind of geographical area are we talking about?
Well, my starting point is about 5 miles between the Mallow side of Glenville Village. That was where I started this morning, loaded up, and I went into near Rack Cormac to do a delivery, and in the yard I delivered to, I just went over to the big pools of water.
Okay,
there.
From my Mallow Rack Cormac, I would imagine that you're in a very, very big farming area there, and it's runoff from fertiliser.
Well, you see, Neil, I'm delivering fertilizer, liquid fertilizer, from a pig unit to these farmers, and it comes out of the tank and it goes into a tank. So there's no spillage around the yards. It's not like the piggery itself is in the middle of forestry. Like there's no runoff. It's surrounded by a couple of thousand acres of trees. And the farm where I'm delivering to is there's no, he hasn't spread fertilizer.
Don't know, man. I can't answer.
So, like, I just wanted to put it out there. This is the Cork area. I'm actually from Tipperary myself. Like, I come down every morning. And as I said, I've never seen anything like this. I just wanted to put it out there for the public to look, say, in Mallow Town, back towards Mill Street, you know. Is there anything in the puddle of the water around them? So it's just a bigger geographical area.
I know it'd be alarming, all right, if it's none of the things that I've tried to work out and given you options to take on board.
I've taken two separate samples.
UCC would test those for you, you know.
Yeah, well, I have the clean water bottles, you know, mineral water bottles, and
somebody says it's pollen. Pollen. I don't know. It's pollen.
No, where did the pollen come from? Pine tree there. You know.
I don't know. I'll share the photographs on social and allow people to take a look at them. They may know. You might know somebody. Somebody might be maybe trained in that area. They might see these shots. Why don't I just do that and see?
Yeah,
what
well, generally
say.
We don't get a lot of pollen when it's raining like this.
It could be a farmer. Somebody else is suggesting farmers emptying their slurry tank.
No, it's not slurry. Slurry is brown or more green from cattle. I'm dealing with slurry all the time. This is
you know
yellow.
Your slurry.
It's
yeah.
Pure yellow. Like. Yeah. Yes, I know my slurry.
All right, okay.
But this is very yellow. And as I said, I'll send you a picture of the bottle with it in, which is more of a clearer picture of the liquid.
I don't have the bottle picture, but I will check.
I'm on my way back to
okay,
where
do
the
that.
Bottle is. I took the sample at the unit. And you'll see it... I'll take a close-up picture and I'll send it again.
Okay, do, and we can share them and see what people make of it.
Samples too. You said UCC in Cork?
Oh, they do all of the testing, UCC. They will definitely tell you what's in it.
Well, we'll find out then, won't we?
Yeah. So, okay, send out more pics and we'll share them, and maybe people listening might have a look and see what they make of them. For all of the business, pick up the phone 0818 104 106 back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
I live where that man is talking about it in around that area, and there's fierce pollen on the ground. Our car was covered. I live in near the woods. It's definitely pollen, like a very light green yellow foam on the puddles. I don't know about green, but certainly yellow, but maybe it's pollen time and that's what it is. But anyway, he's just curious as to what it is. Thank you for those texts. We'll share the photographs so you can have a closer look at it. Bear in mind, there's still a lot of texts with regards to the amount of people who are attempting to get housing with regards to HAP. And I was talking about the stats earlier on this morning with so many people, 15,000 people looking for bidding on only a handful of houses. And it's just going from bad to worse. That guy, let me just get more text here with regards to that one. And that would include Poland is still allowing Ukrainians to cross the border and come to Poland. It has never changed. There was some fake news regarding this, but none of it was true. Poland was actively helping Ukrainians from the very first day of the war, and this great help is still ongoing. Well, that's kind of interesting, because that wasn't my understanding of it. But anyway, another one here. Please stop having a cheap pop at the cost of Ukrainian pets on a daily basis when the government is spending over 2,000 million, as in 2 billion, on a children's hospital. That is the horrific waste of money where you should be pointing all of people's angers. I'm sorry now, but what about all the millions of them spent? I heard it. You guessed it. The millions being spent on pets from Ukraine. I mean, it is true, the amount of money being spent on the welfare of pets for Ukrainian war refugees, because even Micheál Martin recently came out and spoke about it, it is a true figure, and it's a consequence of war, and that everybody deserves to have a pet, and that for many people suffering from the psychological damages of war, that a pet or a dog can make all of the difference. Thank you for all of those. Keep them coming. Text 0868104106. But anyway, to where you met your partner. Let me squeeze at least one in this side of midday for an overnight stay at the Metropole Hotel. So what have we got here? Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are we?
Okay, an Irishman, a Welshman and a Scotsman walks into a bar or something like that.
Yeah, the Irish woman and a Welshman in a Scots bar, yeah.
What happened?
Yeah. So I met my wife back in 2005 in Edinburgh in the establishment for Dropkick Murphys, it was called. We met up that night. We're still together 19 years later. Married and three kids. I suppose I was just saying there that we one of the funniest stories I think I can ever recall was when I first met her, we'd arranged to meet up about 3 or 4 days later. And at the time we had the G8 summit happening in Edinburgh.
The G8 summit, all the world leaders were in Edinburgh.
Yeah. Yeah, all the world leaders were there. And obviously there's a bit of trouble there with protesters and everything else, and obviously the riot police were out. And I remember on the day I'd be in one end of Princess Street and due to go to the other side to meet her and couldn't get there, which, unfortunately, with all the riot police and protesters and everything else. But look, that didn't stop us. I still managed to get to her in the end. So a bit of to and fro between here and the UK and eventually I've ended up here now. Or fortunately.
Okay. Do you say fortunately or unfortunately?
I did. Fortunately.
So what were you doing in Edinburgh?
So I was working. So I was working in Edinburgh in a leisure centre. She was travelling. She just finished university and travelling. And that's how we ended up meeting one night.
So it was a case of, where are you from originally?
Wales originally.
Okay,
yeah,
so
yeah.
Why was Cork chosen and not Wales? Did she win that war?
Oh, she won. She went back home, and it was a follow my heart. And look, it was either come over or that was the end of it. So, I took a trip over, and fell in love with Cork, and never went back.
That's a hard call to make. Firstly, she went home and you went home, but you found the yearning too much, so you made the decision to just decamp from Wales and pick it up in a relationship in Cork.
Look, the best decision I ever made.
Did you marry?
We married in 2011 in Garryvaugh, well and truly settled now.
Do you get back to Wales a bit?
Now and again, not that much now. A lot of my family tend more to come over. Now with three kids, it's a little bit harder now with three small kids to try and get over.
And all of this because of an impromptu meeting in an Edinburgh bar. That's a great story.
Okay,
well done. Stay listening. Thanks for that. We'll try and get another one or two on if I can between now and midday and come back to it then in the morning with Mick Mulcahy. I just need details of the band, so I just want to chat up to it. We were contacted earlier in the week by a group from, I think they're from all over the country, Kyo Live. Rather than me introduce them, I'll bring open their mics and bring them in themselves. So we got Cahal from Dublin, Daryl from Kildare, James from Wexford. There's got to be more of you than that.
Me.
Who's the me?
Daryl, I'm from Kildare.
All right, okay. So all together you make up Kyo Live. What brings you to Cork?
We're here to promote our new single. We have a single that is called One More for the Road.
Okay. Any gigs?
Not doing this far now. We're out this weekend. We're flat out this weekend with festivals. We're just about to hit the busy festival season now, so we're going to be all over Ireland and all over England and Scotland as well.
Okay, but have you played Cork?
We played in Bandon.
Okay.
And we played the Cork Opera House as well.
Oh, you have done both the city and the county then?
We have.
Okay, with the debut album that received 3 million streams in a month alone, mad keen to hear what kind of music you guys can do. So what have you got? Is it the new song?
No, we're actually going to do a cover here. We're going to do we have a version of Beeswing out that's done really well for us, but we have the single with us as well. For we'd like to play the actual
okay,
single.
Okay, let's go for it. Yeah. Go for it in your own time. Let's hear it. Go live.
They call it the summer of love. They were burning babies, burning flies, the hawks against the doves. When I took a job at the steamy way down in Calvin Street, I fell in love with the laundry girl who was working next to me. She was a rare thing, as fine as a bee's wing, so fine the breath of a wind might blow her away. She was a lost child, she was running wild. She said, so long as there's no price on the best day, you wouldn't want me any other way. Hey, hey, let's go. We bust around the market towns, from picking down in care. We could take her bots and pants and laser everywhere. Get a few acres of fire burning at night, and Bobby's on the rug. She said, oh man, you foolish man, that surely sounds like hell. You might be Lord of the words, and not on me as well. She was a rare thing, as fine as a bee's wing, so fine the breath of a wind might blow away. She was a lost child, she was running wild. She said, so long as there's no price on the best day, you wouldn't want me any other way. We were coming down the gallows one time, the work was mighty good. She would wait for the harvest, I thought we should. We were drinking more in those days, her tempers reached a pitch. Like a fool, I let her run away when she took her out of the ditch. Last I heard, she's sleeping rough, way back on the Derby beat. A bottle of white horse in her pocket, a wolfhound and a wolfhound. She was a rare thing, as fine as a bee's wing, so fine the breath of a wind might blow her away. She was a lost child, she was running wild. She said, so long as there's no price on the last day, you wouldn't want me any other. She got married once to a man called Romany Brown, but even a gypsy caravan was too much like settling down. And they say her roses faded with feather and hard blues. Sure, maybe that's the price you pay for the change that you refuse. She was a rare thing, as fine as a bee's wing, so fine the breath of a wind might blow away. She was a lost child, she was running wild. So long as there's no price on the last day, 'cause she was a rare thing, as fine as a bee's wing. I miss her more than ever words could say. If I could just taste all of her wildness now, if I could hold her in my arms today, I wouldn't want her any other way. I wouldn't want her any other way. And I miss her more than ever words could say.
That's incredible.
Well, thank you very much.
That really packs a punch. That's amazing.
Thank you very much.
I've got to see you back on Leaside sometime soon.
Yeah, hopefully.
Thank you. all our dates will be on kyoban.com anyway, so keep an eye out on that, okay, anyone who's interested.
Yeah, and we're on all social media platforms as well.
And just, you've done a lot overseas, didn't you?
Yeah, we're actually, we've been really luckily, like really busy in England and Scotland.
Certain Andre Bocelli springs to mind. What was that like?
Sorry?
Didn't you play?
Oh, that was Darren.
Oh, sorry, I did.
Oh, you didn't bring the rest of them?
I didn't bring them today.
No, we didn't get the invite that day.
I just did backing vocals with him on a gig a couple of months back, yeah. It was great
that
experience.
Must have been. Were you nervous?
Yeah. Yeah, I was. It was a great experience, I have to say.
Oh, man, that sounds fantastic. Unless, I tell you what, do you want to try and squeeze something really quick in before we finish, or even an edited version of something?
We can do Heave Away or something.
Yeah, we can do a bit of Heave Away.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be good. Check us up to midday. So we got 3 minutes.
Oh, we
can. Cool in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Sometimes we're bound for Liverpool, sometimes we're bound for Spain. Heave away, me jollies, heave away. But now we're bound for Old St. John's, where all the girls are dancing. Heave away, me jolly boys, we're all bound away.
Farewell to all the pretty ladies waving from the dock. Heave away, me jollies, heave away. And if we do return to you, we'll make your cradle rock. Heave away, me jolly boys, we're all bound away.
Sometimes we're bound for Liverpool, sometimes we're bound for Spain. Heave away, me jollies, heave away. But now we're bound for Old St. John's, where all the girls are dancing. Heave away, me jolly boys, we're all bound away.
Then I wrote me love a letter, I was on the Jenny Lind. Heave away, me jollies, heave away. I wrote me love a letter and I signed it with a ring. Heave away, me jolly boys, we're all bound away.
Sometimes we're bound for Liverpool, sometimes we're bound for Spain. Heave away, me jollies, heave away. But now we're bound for Old St. John's, where all the girls are dancing. Heave away, me jolly boys, we're all bound away. Let's go. Farewell, Nancy, darling, for just now I'm gonna leave you. Heave away, me jollies, heave away. You promised that you'd marry me, but how you did deceive me. Heave away, me jolly boys, we're all bound away. Sometimes we're bound for Liverpool, sometimes we're bound for Spain. Heave away, me jollies, heave away. But now we're bound for Old St. John's, where all the girls are dancing. Heave away, me jolly boys, we're all bound away. Sometimes we're bound for Liverpool, sometimes we're bound for Spain. Heave away, me jollies, heave away. But now we're bound for Old St. John's, where all the girls are dancing. Heave away, me jolly boys, we're all bound away. Heave away, me jolly boys, we're all bound away. Hey!
Unbelievable, somebody close the borders. Don't let Kyole out of the county of Cork. Thanks so much, guys. Great way to finish the show.
Thank you very much.
Mind yourselves. We're out of time, guys. We'll have two giveaways tomorrow for the Metropole Hotel. I've run out of time this morning, so you have two chances to win an overnight at the Metropole. Have yourselves a good day.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.